Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you very much. Chuck Moore Speaks, the podcast. My guest coming up shortly will be Clint Hill. He is a Secret Service agent. They retired. He served five presidents, Eisenhower, Kennedy, Johnson, Nixon, and Ford. And Clint Hill was at the scene at the assassination of President Kennedy. We'll be hearing a little bit about that. His book is quite fascinating. I really enjoyed it. It gives a great inside look into the personalities of these five of our five presidents. Also, he was witness to some of the most significant events of the 20th century. I think that Clint Hill is the consummate professional. He represents kind of the old school of professionalism in that his book is not spilling the beans. In other words, this is not a gossipy book. This is a book that deals with substantive issues, national, foreign policy, world issues, and how the various presidents dealt with it, what their style was. I think that he views each of these men with the best of intentions, and he gives us insights into their individual thought processes, their styles, their philosophy, how who they were influenced and affected how they behaved in office. Now, I want to ask Clint Hill his opinion on the new book out by Secret Service agent Gary Byrne, who guarded the Clintons, Crisis of Character. A White House Secret Service officer discloses his firsthand experience with Hillary, Bill, and how they operate. This is the kind of book that on the one hand, I don't think that Clint Hill would have written, because he doesn't like to discuss such matters personally as what he observes. And I think that I'm not speaking for him, and hopefully he'll be with us shortly, but I think that he sees himself in the context of a professional who doesn't do that. However, Hillary Clinton in particular and Bill in general were very abusive toward this particular Secret Service agent. There are many other people who have reported this. And I think that on the other hand, they do have an obligation to speak up and to tell us what they were like. You know, we need to know this. I mean, I think, you know, if you have somebody that is that nasty as a person, particularly as Hillary Clinton was, where you would have like a Secret Service agent say, "Good morning, Miss Clinton," and she would respond by saying, "F you." And she was violent, apparently, and she had a Jekyll and Hyde personality in the White House. I think that's something that the American people ought to know about, especially since she is seeking the presidency. Just like we should know about that if that were the case with Donald Trump. What are their personalities like? I think we have a right to know that. And as such, I think that Gary Byrne is bringing up legitimate issues in his book. But Clint Hill doesn't go there. He doesn't get into the personalities too much of Presidents Eisenhower, Kennedy, Johnson, Nixon, and Ford, all of whom he served. I mean, he kind of implies a few things. But for the most part, he stays away from such matters, although I think that in the broader sense, none of these presidents or their families were like the Clintons in terms of just the low-class, nasty contempt that they apparently had for their fellow government employees, particularly military and police. And people that were really guarding them and trying to protect them and preserve their safety. And I can see where this is something that it goes to character. I mean, I can't imagine any of the other presidents behaving in a way that could be described as anything but respectful. toward our men and women in uniform doing a job, and generally toward working people. But the Clintons had that sort of idea that they were better than and bigger than everyone else, and that they could lord it over people. You know, it's a contempt for working people is what it comes down to. And I frankly have observed this in my own observations with regard to people on the left, and the further left you go, the more contempt they often have for working people. And it's interesting because these are the very self-same people who hold themselves up as champions of working people. I mean, I suppose it could go back to the model of Marx himself, who had nothing but absolute contempt and hatred for working people, to the point where he refused on several occasions when he had been invited by his financial sponsor, Engels, and others, to go out and tour factories, to go out and meet people in unions, to go out in the field a bit and see what working was all about. And he never, ever did it. It's like the same way Hitler probably never toured a concentration camp. You know, they don't want to know what they're doing. It's, everything becomes very theoretical. Everything becomes very ivory tower, if you will. And that maybe he was afraid that the realities of actual working people and their opinions and their conditions and their lives interfere with his agenda, with his philosophies, which were complete fantasy, which were really nothing more than phantasmagoria on paper. Because mostly he spent his life sitting in a dark room, you know, scribbling notes about something that he had no firsthand knowledge of. But yet his works had profound effects on actual working people. And I don't think he ever really expected his work to have any direct effect on improving the lot of working people. I think he saw them basically as cannon fodder, as human resources, in a bigger agenda to change nature, to change man, and to move human societies in the direction of the one world ant colony. Speaking of the one world ant colony, today is the vote, the verdict on Great Britain's membership in the European Union. And the English people, in spite of a huge effort on the part of the top 1% richest people in the world, George Soros in particular, the establishment, sort of the socialistic establishment, if you will, and that includes the Conservative Party leadership, in spite of their extraordinary efforts to suppress the exit and to malign and smear those who supported that, the vote has come in. And the vote was 52-48 in favor of exiting the European Union. Yesterday, as late as the afternoon, before the polls closed, you had the major pundits and the major radio hosts predicting a loss and predicting that Britain would stay. But that's not what happened. It is shocking to the establishment. They are in complete disarray. They don't know what to do with this. The people have suddenly spoken. This is one of those rare moments when people stood up, thought for themselves, evaluated their own interests, their own destinies, and decided to take back their government and exercise their rights and their principles. And the left-wing liberal establishment just doesn't know what to do. They're apoplectic right now. And this is having reverberating effects. Apparently today, less than 24 hours after the vote, there is already a great deal of rumblings about having an exit vote in France, the Netherlands, and Italy. there's already rumblings around the world. I mean, what this means is this is an assertion of national sovereignty in the best meaning of the word. This is a reexamination of the very progressive idea that nation states are answerable to the citizens of those nations, and they represent those citizens, and they preserve the natural freedoms that those citizens seek, as opposed to this kind of globalist, socialistic idea of that it's a virtue to progress human society toward the one world and colony. This is having reverberative effects in the United States. I don't think there's any way around that. They can't deny that. And those reverberative effects happen to coincide with not only a speech that Donald Trump delivered last week in New York, but generally his message. And they keep telling us, oh, he has no message. He just changes his position, and they parse his sentences and find little words that might change slightly. Aha, look at this. But the fact is that he does have a message. And that message is actually quite a bit more clear and quite a bit more plain than messages that have been delivered by any presidential candidate since Ronald Reagan's first term. And that message is simply America first. America must operate like any sane sovereign nation in its own interests. We have to have policies, economic policies, social policies, foreign policy, domestic policy, that serve the interests of the sovereign American citizen first. That power comes from the citizen, and that power is granted in a limited scope to a government which is supposed to preserve, protect, and defend the rights of those citizens. You can go back to the Founding Fathers. Look at the language of Thomas Jefferson in the Declaration of Independence. Look at the Federalist Papers by Madison and Hamilton. Take a look at the comments by written widely disseminated back then. And you'll see that this is the basic philosophy of American governance. Trump is trying to reassert that, for better or for worse. And I'm not here to say that he's a perfect example. He's as an individual, he strikes me as a terrible bore, which, of course, I think actually doesn't, in that sense, he has a lot in common with Hillary. But that doesn't matter. The fact is, this isn't about him. This is about the message that he has consistently portrayed. And it is that message that has animated the leaving by Britain from the European Union. Now let's just take a brief look at the exit from the European Union. First of all, the scaremongers say, oh, this is going to mean that there's going to be tariffs and there'll be no more trade, free trade between Britain and the rest of Europe. That is completely untrue. The fact of the matter is that Great Britain and Europe, shortly after the end of World War II, formed what was called the Common Market, by which it was kind of a free trade zone in Europe. Just like in the United States, we have a free trade zone between the states. That is not affected by this. That remains the same. And in fact, this was exactly what was articulated by German Chancellor Angela Merkel, who said that there would be no change in German-British trade relations. And she kind of speaks for the rest of Europe, that there's not going to be any effect with regard to trade. That remains the same, and that's a good thing. But what it does change is that now the European court in Brussels will no longer be able to supersede the British court. So that if you have a law case before the Supreme Court of Great Britain or whatever they call it, you know, you're not going to have interference, or it's not going to be overturned by some foreign court that's made up of bureaucrats that you don't even know who they are. You know, they're not British. They don't have the interests of British law in mind. And that they can make a decision or render a decision that could affect you or your family. or your friends or your business. Britain is saying no to that. Britain is saying that our judges are going to be appointed by our elected officials. They're going to be operating under British law, which is created by and advanced by our elected officials, not by some foreign bureaucracy. Furthermore, the European Union has been very involved and is becoming more blatant, especially in recent years, in regulating more and more aspects of the individual's life. They regulate what kind of food you eat. They regulate what kind of clothes you wear. They regulate what you do on your property. They regulate how you conduct your business transactions. They regulate even personal relationships, what you can say and not say, what you can do and not do. In other words, it's socialistic totalitarianism, public ownership of the means of production, public ownership of communication. And that is what's being rejected today. That is what the British people have said. They've stood up and said, we're not going to have it. We're going to reassert our God-given sovereignty as individuals, and we're going to reestablish our government as the arbiter to protect those rights. We're not going to subject ourselves to this foreign entity going to regulate our lives or try to regulate our lives. So in that sense, just like the leaders of the Brexit movement said, this is Independence Day for Britain. And it's going to have reverberation across the planet, not just in Europe, but probably in Asia, in Africa, and right here in the good old U.S. of A. So that's my thoughts on that. It doesn't look like Clint Hill is going to be joining me. Maybe we had a mix-up in time. So I'm going to contact him, and we'll have to reschedule it. But meanwhile, I want to thank you all for listening this afternoon. This is my podcast, Chuck Moore Speaks. Have a good day, everybody.